The attack on Pearl Harbor and United States' entry into World War II ended yet another Artie Shaw band. Enlisting in the Navy, he was assigned to lead a band on a morale-boosting tour of American ships, bases, and islands in the Pacific War theater.
Playing for Navy personnel, mostly. As many as 30, 40,000 men, and we were sitting on an improvised bandstand made up of beer kegs, and we played concerts for them. Paratroopers, Marines, Navy, Army, it was all one. It was all one service out there.
His performance on the aircraft carrier USS Saratoga provided an epiphany for Artie Shaw.
Then, one of the most amazing engagements we played on that whole tour, we played the USS Saratoga, which was the largest aircraft carrier in the U.S. fleet. And that was a marvelous thing because they put us on the flight deck, on the top deck of the ship, and the men were assembled down below in the aircraft deck. And the flight deck went down slowly, like the Paramount Theater or Strand Theater in reverse. The flight deck went slowly down as we hit our theme song, and suddenly we saw 3,000 men sitting there in dress whites. And as we came down into that cavernous thing where all the planes were kept, a roar went up such as you've never heard in your life. It was really one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had. I thought I was pretty inured to applause and all that sort of thing, but this was really gutting. And as the old saying, brought a lump to your throat, it sounds silly, but it really did. I mean, it was difficult to play for a while. We finished the show that night and ended with the Star Spangled Banner. It's a pretty corny song, you know. But at that moment, it took on some real meaning. For the first time, it dawned on me that what we were doing musically at that point had an enormous significance for the men who were out there. At one point, I simply couldn't handle it anymore. I took a long walk, and suddenly I found myself almost blacked out. And I found myself talking to a couple of Navy corpsmen, and they said, "What's the matter, sailor?" And I said, I don't know what's going on. I need some rest. I got to get away from all this." They called a doctor. The doctor, as it turned out, was a psychiatrist. He looked at me, found out who I was, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I don't know what I'm doing. I really don't know anymore. One place I go, they say, 'Oh, Artie Shaw, what do you want?' Another place, 'Who do you think you are? Where do you think you are? You think you're in Hollywood?' And, I mean, all I wanted to do was be left alone to do what I came there to do. And it was impossible. Anyway, this psychiatrist sequestered me in a Quonset hut all by myself. See, Guadalcanal was our forward air base. And the further up toward the Japanese you got, the more danger was that a plane would come over. They were bombing us almost every night in Guadalcanal. And at that point, we saw dogfights in the sky at night. It was amazing to see yourself standing on a beach and yelling, "Get the dirty so-and-so," and watching a Japanese plane being shot at and burning. And you know that in there is a human being burned to death. And you're standing like a savage because they've been bombing you day after day after day. War does very weird things to people.
Returning to civilian life was difficult for Shaw. He fell into a deep depression and soon divorced yet again. This time from Betty Kern, daughter of songwriter Jerome Kern, with whom he'd had a son.
I began to put into place the business I'd spent most of my life in and understand that if I didn't fit into it, it might not necessarily be my fault. That maybe my temperament was opposed to what was required of me in the, quote, entertainment business, showbiz again. And I began to understand at that point the difference between an artistic sensibility and an entertainment sensibility. I realized that my temperament was really much better suited to being what I set out to be, a writer. But I hadn't yet developed the patience to sit down and write. I decided there was only one thing to do, what I knew how to do. So I put together a band. That was what happened. I put together a band. So I found I made do with what I could, and I got some pretty good men.
Another one of Artie Shaw's million-selling records, Dancing in the Dark. During the later 1940s, Shaw retired from music yet again.
Anyway, I bought a farm up in Dutchess County, New York. I made the down payment on the farm and went out with a band in 49, which was probably one of the best bands of its time. I had to make some money to buy the farm, but on the other hand, I didn't want to bore myself to tears, so I figured I might as well have the best band I could. The band went out, and it was an incredible flop. The audiences, which expected me to play my old book that they all knew, Begin the Beginning Again and Back Bay Shuffle and all those things, were terribly disappointed. They couldn't understand. They couldn't dance to it. But I thought, why don't I now that I've had the best band I ever could get, and they hated it, let's see what happens if I get the worst band ever put together. This was my own private joke. There was nobody there to laugh with me at. Well, we went out and finished the tour. It was unbelievable. The audiences loved it. They thought, this is great. At which point, I figured that was as good a time to get out of it once and for all as I'd ever find, and I quit. I went to my farm and started to write. I ran a Holstein farm. It was essentially a milk-producing farm. One of the nice things about the farm itself was that I not only was able to work as a writer, it was a healthy, good life. I liked it very much. It was probably the happiest period of my life.
When the deep purple falls over sleepy garden walls and the stars begin to flicker in the sky, through the mist of a memory you wander back to me, breathing my name with a in the still of the night. Once again I hold you tight. Though you're gone, your love lives on when moonlight beams. And as long as my heart will beat, lover will always meet here.
You're listening to Artie Shaw Redux, exploring the remarkable life and astonishing times of bandleader, clarinetist, composer, and man of letters and culture, Artie Shaw. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for joining me for Jazz Rhythm, a weekly celebration of jumping swing classic blues and hot jazz, old and new. By the end of the 1940s, Shaw was again disenchanted with popular music. He switched to classical clarinet, studied, performed, and recorded music of the symphonic clarinet literature by Debussy, Shostakovich, Gershwin, and others. His career as a brilliant concert soloist culminated in a performance of the Mozart Concerto with Leonard Bernstein and the New York Philharmonic. Eventually, though, Shaw sought peace and quiet on his farm, tried to evade the public eye, and began again to try and fulfill his desire to write. So depending on whether you view his glass as half full or half empty, Shaw didn't quit music so much as return to his first love. In his own words, "I didn't stop playing, I began writing." His autobiographical memoir, called The Trouble with Cinderella, was published to critical acclaim in 1953. But the Red Scare in America, in the form of investigations by the Congressional House Un-American Activities Committee, soon dragged Shaw most unwillingly back into the public limelight.
About a year after the book was out, for a very complicated series of financial reasons, having to do with IRS and taxes and all that kind of thing, I had to go out and earn some money. Part of the way through that tour, I was summoned before the Un-American Activities Committee and had to go back and appear. I was trying very hard to get through that and retain what measure of sanity I might have had at that time.
May I say, first of all, that I'm going to answer every question you ask me as honestly and as fully as I possibly can.
As for what took place at the hearing itself, I was shocked at the idea that I was even asked some of the questions I was, because it didn't seem to me that anybody had any right to inquire into what my political beliefs were. One was, what about the World Peace Congress? And I said, well, I didn't see anything wrong with getting together with a group of people from all over the world to discuss ways and means of achieving peace. Anyway, they said, don't you know that was a communist-fronted peace congress? And I said, well, if you can point me to a Republican-fronted peace congress, I'll go with that. During that hearing, I had only one thing in mind. I was doing what I could to walk a narrow line between not informing on anybody, because I couldn't inform, I didn't know enough to inform, and on the other hand, not saying I plead the Fifth Amendment. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be as cooperative as I could be, given the total contempt I had for the proceedings and what they were doing. It was one of the most scarifying, horrifying periods of my life, and not only mine, but many people I know who were totally destroyed by that. I have considered my position very carefully by that time and decided that I was finished with America. I didn't want to live here anymore. Sold the farm. This whole idea that Un-American Activities Committee and what had been done to me as a result of it was just so distasteful to me that I decided I didn't want to live here anymore.
In what amounted to self-imposed political exile, Artie Shaw retired to Spain. There he soon met and in 1957, married his last wife, Evelyn Keyes.
We fully expected to make a go of it. We made a good try for a long time. Maybe we tried so hard we overdid it. You know, we were together for 5 years in Spain, round the clock.
Building his dream house on the Spanish coast, Artie Shaw finally had peace and quiet, satisfying companionship for a while, and time for a remarkable range of talents to emerge, verging on genius in every pursuit.
I was really only looking for one thing, a place where I could buy, with the amount of income I had at that time, the most amount of time. That's all I was looking for. Time was for me the most important commodity. The place I settled in, which is the eastern coast of Spain, that was the place where I could find what I needed. A place where I could sit and reflect and think about where I was going with my life.
In my opinion, Artie Shaw was what's called a polymath. One who continually takes on and fully masters new skills and fields of endeavor. His wife during the late 50s, Evelyn Keyes, has described Shaw's many enthusiasms, mastering chess and crafting his own chessboards, making his own guns and ammunition, incidentally becoming a crack marksman, wood carving, painting, ice skating, even fixing the household appliances.
He wanted to know everything, his enthusiasm, his mind, how it worked. I mean, surface wasn't enough. He always had to delve and want to know more and why and how and who. He took up many things while we were there. He took up fishing. I think he'd done that before, but he had, for instance, a whole room had to be built on top, over the garage or next to the garage, for his fishing equipment and his fishing library. You know he collects books. He collected on fishing. You want to know about a fish and where that fish is and what it eats and at what time of year and what weather it likes to swim around in? Artie knows. We went on endless, endless trips. Fish live in gorgeous places, I'm here to tell you.
He changed my life. I expect I'm a different person. I am a more grown-up person.